And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson. What do plastic bottles, shipping boxes, and tires have in common? These items often raise questions when discussing recyclables in Porter County. Recycling can be confusing oftentimes, with residents uncertain about what materials recycling facilities will accept. Joining us now is Ellen Capitan, an administrative assistant as well as an outreach assistant with the Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County, to dispel all of the myths and rumors. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for taking the time. It is so important.
Ellen, you're with us today to share more about your organization as well as the importance of properly recycling. Before we dive into the campaign, your organization is on to educate community members about proper recycling. Take a moment to share Waste and Recycling District of Porter County's about us.
Sure. The Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County is a political subdivision in the state of Indiana. It's by code, and so we are a governmental organization that serves all of Porter County to ensure that we are educating everyone on recycling opportunities, and we run three compost sites for the public to use. We have one in Portage, Valparaiso, and Boone Grove, where we compost leaves, where we collect brush and other organic materials. And recently, we've been able to offer drop-off recycling for your household recycling, electronics, and even books.
Ellen, in response to concerns regarding recycling, Waste and Recycling District of Porter County has published a series of articles to dispel recycling myths. Spend a few minutes unpacking some of the concerns addressed in the four-part rebuttal, as well as how educating the residents of Porter County can help us all be better stewards of our planet.
This series came by because, I mean, recycling has been in the news a lot lately. I think there's a lot of, yes, and it's stated in the article, myths kind of associated with that. But that's because recycling is complicated. So with this four-part series, we wanted to break down some of those lesser-known facts about recycling. So we go into talking about the sorting facility. And for me, that's been going to the site and seeing how things can get sorted was really helpful for me in understanding why some things can make it through and why some things can't. There's been a lot of changes really at the national level of recycling, where the countries that we had been shipping our, quote, recyclables to, you know, kind of decided that this was not the product or the material that they could use. So they stopped accepting what we were sending. There's also a lot of talk about contamination, and that's, again, in this four-part series, and exploring what contamination means and what that can mean for this whole process. So whether it's contaminated by way of being dirty, or it's contaminated because it has, you know, your load maybe has things that can't make it through the recycling process or the sorting process, and that can really be consequential for a whole batch of materials that are going through.
And I'm so excited. I want to share with you that in preparing for our conversation today, I learned the meaning behind the three R's, or alternatives to waste management: reuse, reduce, recycle. Take a moment to share with our listening audience how we can all reduce the amount of waste we generate.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's something we talk about a lot. So we say, you know, reduce should be really number one on your list when it comes to the impact that we're making. So reducing, you know, means maybe it's buying less or reducing what could be wasteful. I kind of tie this into really talking about that impact too on recycling. So we had gotten a lot of phone calls of, hey, my bin is full. And when we see some of these recycling bins, they're, you know, chock full of Amazon cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
And so then for me, the stark sight of like, oh, while those things are all perfectly recyclable, the amount that we're putting in there, it is just sometimes shocking to me. So reduction could mean I think Amazon now has where you can get things delivered at the same time to use less boxes. It's being aware of when you're at the grocery store, kind of products you're buying. Are you buying things that are pre-wrapped, or are you buying items that come in cardboard or versus plastic? How, you know, making those types of decisions, buying in bulk or buying, you know, items that can come that way can also reduce the waste that you're creating. So that's a big thing to think about just as a consumer, and as the precursor to recycling. So before you have to decide, oh, is this going in the recycling bin or going in the trash bin? Is it even necessary to to have to think about that? So that's why we really encourage the reduce first. And then I can talk a little more about the reusing too. This is its own kind of version of recycling, but we are working to encourage what does reuse look like through different opportunities with the district. So the first being we brought back the reuse fair. We have done this for the past 2 years at our Earth Day event, where we reach out to different nonprofit organizations and see what kind of items, you know, they're looking for. Sometimes it's like old cardstock. So, you know, when you've got, for me, it's like a hobby that didn't last. I'm like, what am I going to do with all these different art supplies? Right. There are organizations that are looking for that. And then instead of purchasing new, or instead of me throwing this in the garbage or the recycling, there is a group that can reuse it for their different projects. We had, I think Washington Park Zoo was looking for, you know, lightly used blankets or bedding. We had some different school groups that needed various art supplies. So we were able to collect a lot and divvy that out to these organizations. We also have recently, this will be our second year of offering Fix-It Fairs. And at these Fix-It Fairs, we have folks that are versed in what's like sewing or electronics fixing, simple wiring, things like that. And so people in the community can bring in a broken DVD player or pants that need stitched up. And there's a volunteer that can do that fixing. So there's the educational opportunity there, as well as saving items from going into the landfill.
Ellen, so the Waste and Recycling District of Porter County's website points out that we all have household hazardous waste. And you've hosted a number of collection events throughout the year. Share more with our listening audience about the last mobile collection event of the calendar year, as well as what items are accepted.
Sure. So every year we offer about 6 household hazardous waste collection events. This year we actually offered 7 and had a weekday option, so that was really exciting. But our final one for this year is October 12th. It is at the Porter County Expo Center from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And this is usually a pretty exciting and well-used event. So this mobile collection, again, I said we have multiple throughout the summer. This one will be at the Expo Center, whereas other in the year we had Portage High School. We've been at Boone Grove High School, as well as the Chesterton High School. So we try and make sure that we have opportunities for people throughout the county. This one in particular will also have a tire collection where we can take really any tire on a rim, off the rim. We've gotten bike tires, motorcycle tires, and then huge tractor tires. So we can collect those. There are prices sometimes associated depending on how many you're bringing and the size. That's all listed on our website as well. But the other things, and you had mentioned, was we all have these items in our house, and it's true. Weed killer, so herbicides, fertilizer, old gasoline, old motor oil, maybe some dead smoke detectors, things like paint thinner, lighter fluid, nail polish. These are all things that, you know, most of us see, and we're like, this can't possibly be good to put in the garbage. So it's considered household hazardous waste. And again, we offer these mobile collection events free to Porter County residents.
Great.
And that's, go ahead. Yes. And people do, I mean, you clean out your garage or your shed or you're going through the basement. Like, we have it and we can take that, and then our vendor will dispose of them or recycle them as they can.
Great, Ellen. So you gave a pretty detailed list of a lot of the household hazardous waste items that will be accepted at the last mobile collection event of the calendar year. But I have to ask you, are there any items that are not acceptable at this collection event?
Yeah, really, one of our biggest questions that we get is always about what can I do with paint? So most of us have extra household paint from, you know, we didn't use the whole can or we're saving it for touch-ups. We can't take that latex paint. There is a facility in Hobart that may take, if it's in good shape. Good shape means that it's not rusted or frozen. They can recycle that. Or, and this is surprising to a lot of people, you can dry it out and just put it out for your garbage pickup. So by drying it out, you can use cat litter, shredded paper, or I think the like home improvement stores will sell a quick dry material that you can put in there and lay it out without the lid on, and it'll get picked up. But that's our most asked, and then the most I have to say no about right. for these events is latex paint. I think the other is this residential use, so we can't take from any commercial businesses like large scale and hazardous waste.
Oh, well, now I'm curious. How do you prevent someone who knows that you cannot accept from a commercial business, but then they show up in five cars? Maybe they drive a car, their mom drives a car, their child
right.
drives a car.
Well, how do you prevent it's that? A lot of trust.
Yeah.
I guess it's a lot of trust in the people coming in. But, you know, when we start seeing the same thing in, like, large, you know, containers, and, you know, might take some questions.
We're speaking with Ellen Capitan, the Administrative Assistant as well as Outreach Assistant with Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County. Ellen, let's talk about the Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County compost sites. Residents can bring their organic yard waste, including branches, limbs, brush, and leaves, but residents can also pick up, free of charge, nutrient-rich compost and mulch for their home gardening and lawn care needs. Spend a few moments sharing the process as well as the locations of the composting sites.
The three that are open to our public are in Portage, Valparaiso, and Boone Grove. Those full addresses are listed on our website. And we take, like you said, this organic yard waste. So when you're weeding out your garden or deadheading, it's about that time, that counts as, you know, yard waste, that woody, branchy stuff. We take that, it goes into our brush piles, and then in the summer, we mulch that down. The compost, which everyone loves because it is so nutrient-rich, is made from the leaves collected by municipalities and brought in by other residents. So we get these huge windrows full of leaves. They'll start breaking down over the winter, and then the warmer weather will start turning that, and it'll just start breaking down, and the piles get smaller and smaller until they're eventually put into the big pile to cure over the winter. So by May, that the cooked compost is ready to go on your garden. So that is free. The mulch is free. This is self-load. There are a couple options for Portage or Valparaiso, if you want the city to load, you can schedule that. And there, depending on which site you're at, there may be a price associated with that. But it's an excellent option, especially for people looking for, like you said, nutrient-rich compost and mulch for your gardens.
I want to share with you, Ellen, another reason that I was so excited to talk to you today, and I shared a little bit about this with you offline before the start of our conversation for today. I was at an event in Valparaiso the other day, and one of your representatives was there and shared a little bit about your organization, and she shared information about a program that I just took for granted or just never really paid attention to, and it's the event recycling containers. And I want to shine a light on that because, again, we're in the fall season. We were just talking about composting, but the fall season and winter season is also the season of so many events that will be happening across the region. We're in gala season, we're in homecoming season, football season, and she shared that there is the availability to call your organization, reach out to your organization, and get event recycling containers free of charge. So share with our listening audience more about that program, as well as what the program guidelines are.
Yeah, happy to talk about that program, and I'm glad you see all the potential it has, too. We want more people using this program. The special event containers, a lot of people have maybe seen them when they're out at different events, maybe downtowns, or mm-hmm. people have borrowed them for graduation parties and open houses. But they are blue containers with a clear bag that collects bottles and cans, plastic and aluminum. They are free of charge. You come and pick them up at our Valparaiso site. You let us know how many bags of recyclables you collected, and that's it. It's that simple. So we are trying to see this at more, whether, like you're saying, galas or games, or maybe you're hosting a large party and you can't quite fit all the recycling in your bin. You can borrow these containers and have that option for recycling for your guests. And again, free of charge. And it's, you know, an easy way to divert recyclable items from the landfill and give them a second chance at becoming something else.
Now, Ellen, I understand there are a number of ways residents can get involved. So talk more to our listening audience about classes, events, and programs that you host across Porter County.
I'd be happy to. So as I had stated earlier, one of our upcoming events is the Fix-It Fair. That's October 26th at the Valparaiso branch of the Porter County Library System. We'll be there from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Please register online so we know that we've got a fixer there that can help you with your item. We also will have, almost forgot what month it was. We talked about our household hazardous waste. That's next weekend, October 12th. And one of our most beloved programs, which we'll try and host in the winter months, I think last year we did February, is our Master Recycler class. This is a 5-week, once a week series where we have professionals from different realms of recycling and waste reduction. So we'll talk about our district. We usually will have someone from Homewood Disposal. That's where we send our recyclables to be sorted. We've had a representative from our hazardous waste vendor that teaches our classes how those items are disposed of or recycled. And we've had at-home composters come talk about how she, you know, what her waste reduction is like and how she recycles household items into compost. So that's always a pretty well-received class as well. So that information will be uploaded to the website when we've got that set, but it is usually a pretty hot ticket item because people really do want to learn more about recycling and how they can, you know, make a positive impact in their lives. So we're happy to and proud to continue to offer that. I would also better do a plug for Earth Day. This is in April, so this is one of our, it is our biggest event. It's the Northwest Indiana Earth Day Celebration. We'll bring in vendors from all across Northwest Indiana that talk about their impacts on the environment. That could be gardening clubs. We've had the Humane Society of Indiana there before. Valparaiso University students that are studying microplastics, performances, just everything, kids' activities, different speaking events where you can learn more about recycling. It is always a fun event, and we're happy to keep growing that and expanding that and bringing more and more people in to participate with us.
Finally, Ellen, at the start of our conversation, I had you share a little bit more about the 4-part series of articles that your organization published to help dispel recycling myths. So can you share with our listening audience where they can find those articles, as well as where they can find out more about your organization, the Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County?
our website's pretty easy, PorterCountyRecycling.org. And from there, we have, like I had said before, the information on compost sites, where to find them, the acceptable items for household hazardous waste collections. We've got a recycling directory where you can look up kind of funny things that you're not really sure how to dispose of. One question that I actually get asked a lot more than you might think is, like, old trophies, what can I do with those? We have a whole link for that on places that will recycle or reuse trophies. There's information on prescription medicine, different office supplies, mattresses, you name it. And if you can't find it on there, you can give us a call. There's also information about our upcoming events, how to borrow one of those special event recycling containers, how to compost at home. And then on our blog page, that is where our listeners can find the articles where we explore these myths with recycling. So the different series, like I had said, one is kind of outlining what those myths are or the complications. In our second article, we talk about the actual process. In the third article, it's on contamination. And in the fourth, we outline how you can act locally and make changes at home.
Ellen Capitan is the administrative assistant as well as outreach assistant with Recycling and Waste Reduction District of Porter County. Ellen, thank you for spending time with us today, sharing so much important information about the work your organization does. And we will be sure to include all of the details, including the website and the phone number to your organization, for everyone in our listening audience. But again, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. Talking with our children about the upcoming general election, voting, politics, and even civic engagement can feel a bit overwhelming. But it is important that we recognize that little minds are like sponges, soaking in everything around them. Our youth live in a connected world and are constantly confronted with political messages. So discussing politics with them is a way to engage authentically. These conversations also serve as an opportunity to let them know the value system you use to critically engage in the world. In a heated election season, how can parents foster social awareness and civic-mindedness in even the youngest among us? Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman joins us now to discuss her latest column, Talking to Children About Politics. Tammy, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
It's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
Tammy, as I shared a bit with you offline before our conversation today, it is so fitting that this month's column focuses squarely on a topic of discussion that I recently had, and I'll just call it a spirited debate, if you will. I was part of a group that was planning a large event to honor older Americans. And of course, you know how meetings go. People begin to have sidebar conversations. And of course, one of those sidebar conversations landed on today's political climate. And everybody chimed in their thoughts on candidates. And I began to ask the group that were engaged in those conversations how they are approaching these conversations at home with their children and their grandchildren. And Tammy, I'm going to share with you, there was this hush over the room. And I don't know if it was generational, but I was in a room with some older Americans planning, an event for older Americans. And then they reminded me of the old adage of children are to be seen, not heard, that they should remain in the room, but they are not to engage in quote unquote or participate in quote unquote adult conversations. And I reminded them that 2024 is not like 1984, 1994. Not even 2004. And their kids, they have access to media, to social media, and so they know what is going on in the world today, particularly with the political climate. So again, I am so happy that you wrote your column. And so I have to ask you, is that why you made the decision to write this month's column, Talking to Your Children About Politics?
Well, yes, I would say certainly. You know, I think we do have I think sometimes politics are so charged with adults that we assume that it's going to be equally as charged, or it must be equally as charged with young people. And in fact, there's a lot of conversations and there's a lot of conversation to be had that is more foundational and isn't, it doesn't have to be contentious and can be more grounding, I would say, than mm-hmm. starting at the very end, kind of, and remembering that kids are just learning how to engage in these discussions, and they need guides and they need supporters to help them, you know, because at the end of the day, we do know that having the kids that are engaged in their community, kids that, you know, the kids that vote and show up and volunteer, all of that, that translates into really favorable benefits to them personally, not only to our communities, which we know we need, you know, young people to be engaged and we need future leaders to be curated and all of those things. But we know that kids who volunteer and vote have positive mental health and physical health benefits. Also, that civic engagement in all of its forms is actually associated with increased future income and education levels. So it's good for our kids to be engaged, even though sometimes it can feel a little sticky.
I was going to ask you about that because you do note in your latest column, the find from the journal Child Development, those exact things, the impact of civic engagement on the future success, as well as volunteering and voting on mental health. And I am so glad that you had the foresight to include that in your column because people don't necessarily correlate those things together.
Right. Sometimes we think we need, you know, we want everyone to be engaged so that, you know, we can, you know, say that we had such a turnout rate or whatever that is, but it's actually good for the individuals and for kids. So then it becomes, you know, at what age do you have what conversation? And you know, with you really there, you can start at a very young age, even young kids ages 5 to 8, you can start talking about concepts and having some of those early conversations.
So Tammy, we all know that, and you alluded to this at the start of our conversation, that children are in fact sponges. They soak in everything. But having conversations about topics, again, that many of us believe are above their heads are tough. So take a moment, if you don't mind, to walk us through step by step how you document how we can engage in these age-appropriate conversations.
Certainly. So little kids, you want to keep it very simple explanation, kind of how government works, the role of the president, Congress, Supreme Court, you know, really kind of those easy things. One of the activities that is recommended for really young kids is let them vote. Let them vote on, you know, what movie we're going to watch tonight or what dessert they might have or snack or what game we're going to play, so that they understand the concept of voicing an opinion, but being one of those opinions. And you know, ideally, sometimes their vote will carry and sometimes their vote won't. And then also letting them process, how do I feel when I did, when my vote did lean to get to the outcome I wanted? And how do I feel when it doesn't? And then think about how the other folks feel, right? If you get your favorite dessert tonight, you vote and you win and you think, great. Well, then maybe my friends or sibling didn't get what they wanted. And let's try to put ourselves in their shoes as well, which shows, you know, just teaches that voting process and showing up matters and that sometimes you win and sometimes you don't.
One of the paragraphs in your column, model respectful dialogue. So whenever I engage with children, I always ask myself, when kids tell us something, is it bothering them? And do I listen to them so they know how to listen to others? And also, when we listen to kids, do we show them that even the smallest, most vulnerable voice in the community deserves to be heard? And I think that you kind of shared when you went through the steps on how to make the conversations age appropriate, not only how to make those conversations age appropriate, but again, let the young people know that their voice deserves to be heard.
Absolutely. And kids do want to be heard. And we also need to, as you said, model that behavior. So even when it's something you disagree with, it's important to discuss differences calmly and respectfully, and to use those I statements where you say, I believe that, not that we must all, because we know that not everybody shares the same beliefs. Not everybody shares the same values. You know, you want to avoid derogatory language, showing, and really one of the biggest things is showing a willingness to listen to other perspectives. Listening doesn't cost you anything, right? It doesn't mean that you agree. It doesn't mean that you're going to change automatically. It just says you have, as you were saying, you have a right to be heard, and I'm willing to listen.
Tammy, in the minute or so that we have left, I love how you wrap up the column, sharing that we should talk about focusing on values. So again, we all know that 2024 is a big election year, not only nationally, but bringing it back to the Hoosier State, as we will be going to the polls on Election Day, voting for not only the next president of the United States, but also the next governor for the state of Indiana. And unfortunately, our kids have heard a lot about candidates, both positive and negative, particularly within the last few months. And they could have heard it on media. They could have certainly heard it on social media. And again, the values that they hear via those media outlets may not necessarily align with the views and the values that you have in your home. So as we wrap up our time together today, share the importance of values. As you note, they can help children develop a sense of civic responsibility as well as a desire to contribute, and I note positively, to our society.
Right. And as you said, you know, it's really one of those things where all of this comes together of staying in conversation, learning to listen, showing your voice, having some of those conversations on those values that many of us, most people, I would say, even hold sacred, which is fairness, truthfulness, justice, the importance of civic engagement, and even pride for our country. And focusing on some of those bigger concepts, regardless of, you know, candidate or party or what those things are, really helps kids understand that there's a bigger purpose and that, yes, of course, we want to stay informed and we want to, the voting is so important and we want to be active. Don't lose sight over what a privilege it is to be in the democracy that we have and really focusing on those values that really unite so many of us.
Wow, Tammy, I think that's actually an excellent point for us to leave our conversation on. You know, I always enjoy having you with us because you share information about your organization, Indiana Youth Institute, to, of course, ensure the well-being of all of our youth across the Hoosier State. But you also share information to help us as adults to be better contributing members of our society as well. So I enjoy our time together, and I thank you for joining us, and I cannot wait to have you back with us next month.
Thank you so very much.
And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. Kelly Carey's passion for animals led her to establish Silver Stray in 2019. Since its inception, the 501c3 nonprofit organization has assisted more than 700 Gary pet families. Silver Stray is the silver lining for Gary's pets before they wind up on the street, sick, or in an overwhelmed shelter. The organization uses the visibility of their highly trafficked monthly clinics to provide a bridge to vital resources that help create a culture of sharing and build a stronger community. Joining me now to talk about the great work her organization is doing to assist pet families in the region is Kelly Carey, the founder of the organization. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me on Regionally Speaking.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Kelly, I want to know your story. So, what is the story that led you to form the organization Silver Stray?
So, I used to work at a shelter where I would find that marketing and social media was always kind of on the lower of the priorities. And so that would always lead to the seniors and special needs animals to kind of, they would not be adopted as quickly as they could, you know, without utilizing proper social media and marketing presence. And so I had a knack for that, and I was really good at it. And I had this affinity for this one dog that was in the shelter for 3 years. Her name was Layla, and no fault of her own. She just kept being returned, and she was a senior, and it really bothered me. So I took to local platforms where, you know, the paper, the radio stations, flyers, anything that you can think of, we did. And so to no avail, it didn't work. It, you know, we received a really high traction, but still we just were not able to find her home. So then I thought bigger and I moved to larger platforms, like national platforms. And eventually BarkBox picked up her story, and her story ended up being on Google, like just the morning page, you know, the page when you click on the Google search engine, her story was right there. A family in Silver Spring, Maryland does their daily scroll on Google. Her name is Lilia Wagner. She opened Google and there's Layla's story, and long story short, they contacted the shelter. They wanted to adopt Layla. They live 11 hours away. They after getting all the logistics straightened out, they finally made the journey a couple months later to adopt Layla. And so then 6 months later, on my birthday, we decided to go and visit Layla and John and Lilia. And then the rest is history. Like, now I'm part of the family. You know, they're older now. So I go every month or every 2 months to visit them, to help them. You know, they don't have any children of their own. I mean, I'm in their will. I mean, it's just how strangers turned into family all because of a dog. And not every situation is going to happen like this, or end up have a conclusion like this, but it's just such an amazing story. And so after Layla, that's how I created Silver Stray, because I said, I was like, this can't, this happens everywhere. You know, there's shelter everywhere in shelters. There's animals that are sitting, or, and because shelter workers, they don't have the know-how, or they're not paid enough, or they have to take care of 40 other animals, and they don't, Facebook and social media is the last thing on the docket. So, or in the last, the last priority above care. And so I created Silver Stray. And then I helped some dogs in down south that were in shelters for 6 years, and another one for 3 years. And then I took a break and I got my big girl job, my career after going to school and everything. I became an ecologist, and which landed me working a lot in Gary and restoring one of the last highest quality dune and swales in Northwest Indiana left is in Gary. So I worked there for many, many years, and still working on the back burner, very in a small amount, even on the weekends at shelters. So I kind of never left the animal welfare field. And then eventually I just decided that animal welfare was more of a passion. And I started working in another local shelter, and I had a lot of families from Gary come in that needed assistance, and I couldn't help them because they were not in our jurisdiction at the time. So, and that bothered me. So I left, and I had already had the nonprofit established for logistics, and so I left the shelter, and I just decided, I know what I'm capable of. I'm going to do it. I left and I started the program. I was already familiar definitely with the community and the landscape of Gary. So this wasn't just like I was coming in blind. And now it is flourishing. We are helping so many people. So much good is being done. And I really, this isn't just like another, it's just not another rescue in town. This is really, I feel like through all my mileage in animal welfare, I really have come to the solution of how to really stabilize and heal a pet community. And obviously, unless you live under a rock, how underserved Gary is. And so, there's not really anybody, any organization in Gary to provide the help that we can or that we do. And so here we are talking to each other about the program.
Right. Absolutely.
Sorry that was like a story not so short, but it's not really a short story.
No. And I love that you shared that, because I was actually going to ask you, you spoke about your volunteerism with the shelter and your work with the shelter, as well as your work in restoration ecology in Gary. And so I was going to ask you, is that what inspired you to help local families? Because let's be real, being a pet family is quite expensive. You look at the income levels of, let's just compare families in Porter County, in Valparaiso, for instance, to families in Gary, Lake County in Gary, and they are not equal. And so I was going to ask you, is that what led you, your work seeing animals during your professional work in restoration ecology, is that what led you to help families in the city of Gary?
I mean, so while I was doing work, I was always doing like smaller things, like whether it was like on a much smaller scope, like, or scale, like I would maybe porch drop food, or I would help like little spay and neuter, like little, like families with, out of my own pocket, even whatever. I just, would come across families that needed some help. And so I would help them. So I don't think it was really related to the ecology itself. I think it just was always like innately there. And then, for the longest time, I was really scared to start it, and I didn't want to. And Jay, who's here, he's he always wanted me to. And I think it just had to, I just had to figure it out for myself. I just actually had to pull the trigger and just do it. And so, but yeah, I think it was just always kind of there in me. And then I really realized that, you know, what the real solution is and what it, you know, what it was. And it wasn't just this or that. It was really tackling the parts that we do of the program to really help families survive, not only survive, but really thrive.
So Kelly, earlier you mentioned one of the first pets that you helped was Layla. And so I just have to ask you, is Layla the inspiration behind the name of the organization?
Silver, obviously, like silver, like, you know, older, like the color silver gray, and then Stray, just because of the, you know, the stray animal. And then the shadow of the dog was my dog, Inky. She was a senior. And so she, Layla's the inspiration. Without Layla, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. So, but just not necessarily the logo or whatever. But yeah, she's the inspiration behind everything, everything. So any good thing that happens, it's all because of her, because without her, and the whole experience, this program would not exist.
Now I want to talk about the program. So Silver Stray hosts monthly clinics that offer free spay and neuter, free vaccines and microchipping, just to name a few of the offerings. Are the clinics for Gary residents only?
Yeah. So you just have to be a Gary resident. There's like drive-through clinics. It's like you're going to go through like a fast food place, right? And so a restaurant, and we have everybody stay in their cars. They advance in lines. Everybody stays in their cars for, you know, safety purposes. We have amazing volunteers, vet techs, really knowledgeable people that provide the services right in the car or right by the car. And then they receive proof of everything. And then on they go. We try to be efficient. You know, I joke, but we really at this point are pretty efficient, almost like Portillo's drive-thru. So,
right.
So we, and you know how efficient they are. And stuff. Right. So we provide the free rabies vaccines, a free distemper vaccines, microchips. We don't have a dedicated pet food pantry, but we have really strong support through the community from pet food stores. So we always usually have supplies or some food, a little something to give away to everybody. And then free nail trims. We have people that are donating their time and skill for free nail trimming too, which is a really vital grooming task, you know, that sometimes definitely lacks, you know, that when the last thing to be done.
So Kelly, you know, I was so excited to talk to you, obviously because of the wonderful work that you're doing in the region. But I also wanted to share with you, meant to share this with you offline, but it's fitting that I share this with you during our conversation today. So my youngest girls are twins, and one of them has a heart that is just as big as yours. She always seems to attract stray kittens. And I must say, every time I see that look in her eyes of a kitten possibly going without being hungry, I'm not going to lie. I immediately run to the store, buy food. I've even purchased two outdoor cat houses as well to help keep them warm.
Sucked in.
Yeah, I get sucked in. With the weather changing, my husband said, there are two kittens in particular that just have made themselves at home. With the weather changing, my husband said to me, you know, it would be cruel if we left them outside. And so I said, oh boy, we brought them in, we got them checked out, ensured that they were, you know, in our home, we feed them and everything, but we discovered that one is expecting.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And the reason that I bring this up is because another thing that you guys offer is something that I've actually never heard of. It's called TNR, or Trap, Neuter, Return.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important because of the mating season. So explain to our listening audience what that means, especially for helping to control the pet population.
Yeah, Trap, Neuter, Release. It's basically, you know, there's a lot of community cat caretakers, and they, you know, we get calls for they feed five cats or 35 cats. You know, no number at this point is alarming to me. And they're doing the best they can. They just need help, right? And they multiply super quick. And it's, you know, springtime is mating time, and let's rock and roll for all the animals. So, but no, it's just basically, you know, you set a trap. It's like a raccoon trap you can get anywhere. And you trap the cat. You obviously, it's always good to have an appointment ahead of the trapping, because, you know, you can't leave a cat in a trap. But you do it the night before, and then we have the appointment, and we take them, we transport them and everything. But it really prevents disease. You know, they get vaccinated. They're vaccinated. They're flea treated. They're ear tipped, which is important because it's an identifying thing that that tells you that it's a cat that has been fit. It's fixed. Basically, it's a signal that, or a sign that says, "Hi, I'm fixed. I'm taken care of. Leave me alone." And so, if any cat with an ear tip ever comes into a shelter or anywhere, they're just going to say, "You know what? This cat's been taken care of. Put it back where you found it. You know that we know that it's fixed. This is a sign that it's fixed." And it really, you know, it really provides better community health, you know, and prevents disease and just creates, you don't have to love cats to just want to do, you know, to, right. to be able to do the right thing or just what's, you know, good. And so, yeah, it's important. TNR is important. I'm not even really that much of a cat person, but I know how important TNR is, you know, mm-hmm. For the community, for community health and peace of mind for the caretakers. You know, they love these cats. They take care of them every single day. And they just want what's best for them, too. So it is really an important part of it. Absolutely.
Absolutely not. Full transparency, I am not a cat person at all either.
Right.
But I have grown to admire those precious little kittens. Because, as you said, you do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. So
yeah, you can be like, you can hate them, but you just got to do the right thing. And it's not their fault, you know, like we're the ones who, the humans' problem that we're not fixing them and, you know, controlling the population, so it's not their fault.
Now, Kelly, I have to ask you, how do you do it all? I mean, being able to serve as a resource to help pet families is quite costly. And you alluded to earlier some of the organizations that you work with, including pet stores, but do you have a lot of community partners?
Yeah, I mean, so this is a major, there's two parts to this that I'd like to answer. One is I am like, on the computer, like an FBI agent, creeping all day long, sending emails, 400 emails a day, calling
wow.
people. Like, I don't sleep. I just wake up and start typey-typey. I just reach out to everybody and everybody. And you know, having the long mileage in animal welfare, I do have a lot of connections already and resources, which I'm so grateful for, but I'm just constantly always reaching out to more people to see how we can partner, you know, for more grant opportunities. And so people really, there's just so many yeses. You know, I always sometimes harp on the no's and I get so sad and then I'll start crying and just be up so upset, but I can't focus on that. I have to focus on the yeses and all the, you know, the universe will just, you just have to be grateful. You just have to be grateful for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the universe just always provides and it just, it flows. It flows perfectly. So I just constantly am online all day calling and sending emails, trying to gain partners or find grants for the donations. And of course, social media awareness is huge too. You know, I post in Facebook groups and post online and have all the volunteers and everybody share. You never know the power of a share on social media. And so the community donations are huge. We really have a supportive community now behind that. But also the second, so super, super important part of the program is where I have tried to, or I am, gaining partnerships with local organizations that can provide families that with plug-ins to assistance with whether it be transportation, literacy, rent, homelessness, recovery, literacy, the whole anything that you might need. There could be a plug-in for a resource for this, and because I try to look at families as a whole. You know, I don't just care about the dog or cat. I care about the family as a whole, and you have to. And so, you know, a lot of these organizations in Northwest Indiana are underutilized, and they are there for people right in our backyard, but they don't know about them, right? So if I can promote the organization and what they provide anymore, or if I, you know, sometimes I can have them, I say, can you come to a clinic and pass out your literature? You know, we have a line sometimes of 100 to 200 cars that are just captive audience. They're just waiting in line. So you just go down that line, you talk to them about what you do, you pass out some tangible information. And we have the disability advocates from, Naraville, I think, that come out. And they walk the line, identifying families with disabilities, providing them help. And so they identify new families every single time who need assistance. And so, you know, anything from human food assistance to recovery assistance. I get phone calls all the time for different things. And so I try to put all the resources online, of course, on the website, or my phone number is like a public payphone at this point. So if you have some, you know, just call me and I can direct resources to you as well. So it's not just about providing TNR or, you know, a vaccine. It's really about providing that assistance for families as well, personally, that can help them. So that was kind of the two parts to your question.
No, that is awesome. And I think that it is, I just got so excited at hearing you mention the plug-in to other resources for the entire family. It's not something that you hear a lot when you hear about animal help, animal rescue. And
right.
so I think
right.
that addition to the services that you provide is so awesome, honestly.
Because like with that, I really try to provide a culture of caring, you know, and I don't know the stats, but I know a lot more families are moving out than they're moving in. So maybe, you know, if we just create that template, you know, and maybe it will, they have like support now, you know, they have resources. They have resources for their NIPSCO bill, and I'll take care of your pet. And here's all these other resources. So maybe you don't feel like you have no other choice or there's no hope, you know, you're supported and Here it all is, you know, so maybe they'll stay instead of moving out. So.
All right, Kelly, and before I let you go, you've shared a lot of information with us today, and I'm just so grateful that you took time out to join us. But for anyone who is interested in supporting your organization with their time, their talent, and or their resources, how can they get in contact with you?
They can call my phone number, 574-806-2810, or email info@silverstray.org, and all of that is on the website, silverstray.org. So they can definitely find everything that they should need on the website.
Kelly, I thank you so much for joining us today on Regionally Speaking, because you shared so much information mm-hmm. about your organization, a lot of information that prior to me preparing for our conversation today, I was not aware of. So I thank mm-hmm. you for carving out some time, spending time with us on Regionally Speaking today. And here's to hoping that you're able to help more pet families, but more importantly, that more resources are poured in into your organization.
Thank you so much for shedding light, because without time like this and opportunities like this, then, you know, we would not be where we are.
Silver Stray views families with pets as holistic units, and their approach seeks to create a template for transformative change in Gary. By nurturing a culture of caring through Silver Stray, the organization is sowing the seeds for a compassionate community that encourages families to remain and not just survive, but thrive on a foundation of empathy. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest from Recycling and Waste Reduction, District of Porter County, Ellen Capitan, from Indiana Youth Institute, President and CEO Tammy Silverman, and Kelly Carey. And we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.